Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. My name is Shannon, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Shannon.
Oh, first of all, I would like to thank Mike, wherever you went, for asking me to speak tonight. You know, it's always a pleasure to be asked, no matter how nervous I get. My sobriety date is June 18th of 2020. Thank you. And I'm going to tell you what I was like, what happened, and what it's like now. From a child, I grew up in a pretty normal family, you know, at least as far as I saw, you know, we all have our quirks. I had two parents that were married, you know, we had a house. I have a twin brother. So kind of right from the jump, it was a competition. It was like, how am I going to be noticed? And not just be one of the twins. I always hated being referred to that as a child, you know. So any sport he went into, I was also in. I wanted to be better at. I didn't really find a voice of my own for a really long time. It was just like be somewhat separate from him, I guess. My parents growing up were alcoholic. They were two very different kinds of alcoholic. My mom, My mom was generally an at-home drunk. In the beginning of my childhood, we did go out. You know, it was very familiar to me to, like, go out to their old fraternity friends' houses and go to these huge parties. And, you know, by the end of the night, it was like a game. Like, how could I hide her keys so that we could have a sleepover? But I just thought this was all super normal. And not too long into my memory of that, she kind of drifted away from that. I'm sure, you know, they kind of slowed down and she just kept it going and found it easier to stay home. She was a stay-at-home mom in my younger years, so that was easy for her. Whereas my dad was out working and he was the social butterfly, you know, I'm a lot like him. And so he stayed out. And even though I could see that, like, my mom had this obvious drinking problem, like she's passed out on the floor every night, I was more, like, resentful at my father because she was at least there at home, present with me. And, like, I had maybe by age 7 or 8, like, found my own kind of niche. I got into dance, so I was finally, like, separated from my brother, kind of finding my own way, finding that thing that made me a little bit different. And I guess, like, getting into, like, more of my school years, I couldn't really find that, like, place for me. So I had, like, all these different friend groups, and I thought I was, I wouldn't say popular, but just, like, I could hang out with anybody. And what I realize now, like, looking back, is, like, I couldn't find something to bond with anybody over tightly. And so I couldn't, like, stick around one group. I had to be that hopper, you know, that had, like, always somewhere to kind of blend in but nowhere to really belong. So I guess let's jump forward a few more years into high school. I'm getting good at school. I found, like, not only a dance team outside of school, but a POMS team, which I never thought I'd be involved in, but I needed to have, like, that thing at school with them, you know? And I think my freshman year is, maybe it was even eighth grade, I'm sorry. I found drinking. You know, I had a close friend that lived nearby, and her mom was very religious, and she would go on these Christian, like, I don't even know what you'd call it. They were conferences, I guess. She would, like, go out of town, and she trusted her kids, so that became our party house. You know, and it wasn't too long into that where, like, I found that I could be noticeable, I could be comfortable, I could belong, you know, in these parties. And it was pretty easy to get liquor from my home. My parents were always wasted, so they never knew how much they drank, you know. So I could always be that one that would bring things in. But it didn't stay with just alcohol for very long. I pretty quickly found other sorts of party drugs. And it's just crazy to think back now that I, like, didn't see any sort of problems. I'm kind of laughing. It's like my first time, like, doing ecstasy. I was that girl that had, like, taken 7 rolls, whereas my friends like, had one. They were, like, functioning normally and then wanting to go home and sleep. And I guess I just never understood that. But in my own delusional mind, like, I had all the reason in the world not to want to be home. Like, I didn't really get into it, but, so I grew up in this nice home with this family, you know, and so, like, we looked very put together on the outside. That's what we wanted to show you. My parents didn't make a lot of money. They had a lot of bad spending habits. You know, they had a lot of debt. But I had grandparents. They were very well off. And so they bailed my parents out of a lot of things, a lot of financial trouble. So it very much appeared by the house that they saved us, you know, from losing, and the competitive dance teams that I was in, the outfits that I had, like, for that, like, we were doing well. When really it was only, like, what they wanted us to be doing well in. You know, like, I didn't have all the things that, like, my rich friends had, but I also wasn't, I didn't belong with the poor kids either, you know. And that separated me further because I felt like I just couldn't talk to anybody about what was going on, you know, behind those doors. I never invited anyone over to my house, and I didn't really understand my brother could. You know, he had his friends over, and they're playing video games and whatever, like soda pong in the basement. Like, I didn't get it. And but, like, he didn't care, like, what we appeared like. And I, like, from a very young age, was just taught that, like, we don't share what goes on here with anybody else, you know, and I didn't realize how long that would affect me for, how long that would, like, quiet my voice. So I guess going back, like I said, I got into, like, a lot of the party drugs. I was, like, at 13, 14, I was already, like, in college parties and, like, having crazy experiences that should have scared me to my core, you know, but like any other addict, like, as soon as I look back at that night before, I'm like, wow, that was not that. That was, like, just this crazy black cloud over my head, and I would do it all over again. You know, it didn't matter that at, like, 14 years old, I, like, lost all my friends, ended up in a stolen car in, like, a gang member's basement, and I had no idea how I got there or how I was going to leave. You know, like, but it didn't matter because, like, I was able to, like, quiet that insanity in my head and forget about all these, like, troubles, you know, and which most of them were made up in my head. But it was very manageable. You know, I did pretty well in high school. I was, I wouldn't say a straight A student, but I, you know, I did very well without having to try very hard. And unfortunately, like, when I got to college, I didn't realize that, like, it would just get exponentially more difficult, and I never really picked up any good, like, study habits. I just kind of floated by. And, I went up to UW Oshkosh, and, you know, it's called Sloshkosh for a reason. You know, like, I found my town up there, you know. I didn't realize, like, that just because every day there was somebody partying didn't mean that every day everyone was partying, you know. Like, I could always find a place to be from day one. Couldn't always find my way home, but I could find a place to be. And things started happening more frequently. Because of my drinking and using, you know, like, I would end up, my first blackout was in college, and I remember that first moment of being truly terrified, like, how I got to this place and didn't remember, and then how quickly that left me, and I was ready to do it all again, no matter what, you know. I'm kind of bouncing all over the place today, I haven't done this in a while. A few years prior to this, I had been invited to a party in high school in the middle of summer. I don't even know how this happened, but, like, the varsity football players, the, like, captain, and all the big wig guys, like, invited me to this party. And I was under the impression that it was, like, going to be a ton of people, you know, right? And I get there, and I'm the only female. And I'm, like, already getting really uncomfortable. I haven't had anything to drink or drugs or anything, and I'm just like, I don't know how to leave because they picked me up. And I always overthought this, like, how do I get out of here? I could literally just say, take me, like, but I couldn't. I couldn't form those words. And they were already pretty messed up. And the captain of the football team sexually assaulted me in front of the rest of the team, you know, and I just remember him looking at me and being like, Like, don't worry, nobody's going to say anything. And, like, realizing, again, like, reaffirming from my childhood that, like, you don't have a voice. Like, if you say anything, like, they won't believe you. So, like, don't try. You know, and I think that's what really kind of ignited the drinking even more. I normally say in the beginning, like, these things that happened, like, they aren't the reason why I am the way that I am. It was my inability to react to any situation in life, good or bad, without feeling the need to use, you know, obsessing over it, and drink, like, you know, like anybody else, a celebration or something so traumatic, like, I just needed to dive into that, and, okay, so, I guess going back into college, I met a guy, and we were set up through some friends, and I found out that he was in recovery. But I was kind of, like, slowly introduced to this information. The first night we went out, we went to Summerfest, got messed up, you know, the rest is history. And, but when we were dropping him off, I found out, like, I couldn't come in. And then I find out that he had just had, like, 9 months sober, and we all messed that up for him. I mean, it was his choice, but I just had no idea. So I assumed at the time that, like, this guy was an alcoholic, you know, so... when things started to get more serious and he started to get in trouble with drug or alcohol treatment court and his sober living home, like, I start finding out little more information. And I am just, like, this full-blown enabling Al-Anon, you know, like, that's my identity because, like, that's what I've grown up in, you know, I've always... I've been the one to call, whether it was my alcoholic parents or friends or whatever, like, I needed to be that, like, savior, you know, so, I helped him, like, on the run, and I was, I say slow, but it was also so fast, like, how quickly, like, some normal lines that I would have in my life, changed, and were redrawn and pushed forward, and so I found out that he, like, smoked crack and did heroin, and I'm like, oh my God, like, but I have already started to, like, be in this, you know, like, I'm fully in this, I'm an addict, I don't do anything half-assed, you know, like, I'm either in or out, and so, like, I stayed, and I became, like, a lookout, like, I let him have my car, like, I did all those things, and then, unfortunately, he went to prison, and I stayed throughout that. But during that time, like, I, again, can't talk about this situation with anybody. Like, who's going to understand? They're all going to tell me to run away, you know? And I don't, at this point, know too much about recovery. Like, I knew he shouldn't drink. I knew that he shouldn't, like, do drugs. But I didn't understand, like, what this place was that he was staying at, what it was doing for him. I just thought, like, just stop. Like, you know, if I love you hard enough, like, you'll stop, right? You know, so I show him all these reasons, you know, to want to stop and how great our life can be. And he gets out, and we live in a hush hush together for a while. I like, left school. I messed that up. It wasn't obvious that's where that was heading. But I stayed up there, you know, and... I became convinced that, like, his only problems were drugs, you know, and he didn't need these rooms because I had never witnessed what these rooms did, you know, so we were able to maintain drinking and, like, a little bit of partying for, like, 2 years, until one day, you know, one day where that, like, one person had what he needed, and I saw that, like, monster of addiction come back out, even before I saw the, like, pupils, like, I knew. And I'm like, this could all burn to the ground like that. And what am I going to do, you know? So I decide, like, to relocate. So we've come back down here. Like, we live in New Berlin. And I'm getting bad. Like, I cannot... The only way that I can make it seem like I have a decent life is, like, to put that mask on. And the only way that mask can come on is... through substances, you know, and, like, most people had no idea that I was even seeing anyone because I couldn't tell you what was going on here, you know, and, But I think, like, no matter what the outside things were that were happening with his addiction or mine, the lowest part for me was after all this, you know, it got really bad, and I'll spare you all the details of that, was when it started getting better. Like, when he went to rehab and came back here and got into sober living and was doing the thing. My parents both got sober. My mom especially, I never thought would, you know, like, just that person that needs alcohol to go to sleep. Like, that was just the only person I knew of her. Like, I didn't know a sober mom at all, you know. And so I saw this, like, little beam of hope, like, if she could change. You know, and I got back in school, and I was getting some friends. I was getting close with I have a younger sister I never mentioned, and we had parted when I got into all this stuff. And we started getting closer again, and I realized that, like, all these things are going right in my life now, all these external things, and I'm getting worse and worse and worse. And, like, all of these terrible things are happening closer and closer together, and like, just dawns upon me, one morning that, like, I might be the problem here. It wasn't just my parents. It wasn't just this boyfriend. It wasn't just this weird circumstance. Like, it might be me. And what was even more scary to me than that was that maybe I wasn't an addict or an alcoholic. I know it sounds kind of weird. But, like, because if I was an addict or alcoholic, there was a solution. I saw that it worked for these other people, you know. But if I was just a piece of shit, like, maybe I couldn't change that, you know. But I knew one thing, and I was very lucky that I had that significant other and my parents, because I got to meet some of you guys. Actually, like, before I came into any of these rooms, one of the first events I came to was here at a New Year's event. And I was only sober in, like, support of my boyfriend. And I was almost that anxious tonight, which was so weird, but, like, I remember just, like, sitting in the corner, I didn't know anybody, and I was convinced that you all knew that I was just this, like, normie, like, girlfriend of this guy, you know, and you were wondering what I was doing here, because it was obvious I didn't belong. Like, my brain just kept feeding me that, and when really, like, nobody gave a shit, like, nobody cared. And I remember seeing this one girl who was dancing over here by herself, and I had met her through my boyfriend, and I knew that she had, like, really bad anxiety, and she's just over there, like, popping around, and I'm like, I at this point don't realize how, like, that I'm an addict, but I knew that I wanted that, and I didn't know how to get it, you know, and it was starting to become planted in my mind that, like, I couldn't do that sober, you know. And so when I picked up the phone, I called her, I had her number for some reason, and I was just like, hey, I don't know how to say this because I was so afraid of judgment, but I think I have an issue, and do you know a meeting tonight? You know, and so she told me where a beginner's meeting was, and I met her there, and she was running late, and I remember it was just like the longest 20 minutes of my life. I'm sitting there, like, chain-smoking cigarettes in my car, and I see my boyfriend's sponsor walk into, I'm like, nope. I'm not going in there. Like, I don't want him to see me. Like, it just was so much about me, and I just can't even believe that my mind did all these things to me. And then, like, all these cars start leaving, so I guess there was, like, an area meeting that night, and so, like, I thought there was going to be, like, 20 people at this beginner's meeting, and it was, like, two, and they both knew who I was. And, you know, and so they just asked me, like, what are you doing here? I'm like, I don't know. My life's a mess, like, and I am miserable. You know, and I don't know how to fix that. I didn't know if I wanted to get sober, but I knew that you guys had some weird solution to my unhappiness that I might have a shot at, you know. And so I listened to their stories. I don't have any idea what I said. It probably made zero sense. And then they said, you know, are you coming to the main meeting? I'm like, no, I thought this was it. Like, I thought you guys were just going to teach me in here, and then, like, I could go. And, like, no, so they bring me into this room, and all the tables are around in a circle, so, like, everyone has a chance to see everybody. And they ask, like, is this anyone's first meeting? And I'm like, I'm not raising my hand. I'm like, okay, that's fine, and I don't. And then I realize they're going around the room and introducing themselves, and I'm going to have to say something. And so, you know, I did say that I was an alcoholic, and at that point, that wasn't, like, what scared me. Like I said, what scared me was that I wasn't. And so I avoided reading this doctor's opinion that everyone told me about. Like, someone gave me a book that night, and I was just like, what, like, what do you want for this, first of all? You know, and the fact that she didn't want anything, like, blew my mind. I'm like, you have to, you know, because, like, I was also that person. I thought I was super generous, and I would, like, buy you shots at the bar. I would, you know, give you rides, but I always had an ulterior motive. I always, like, kept track of that tally in my head that you owed me. You know, and I would come for it, and then you would disappoint me because you couldn't show up when I wanted you to. You know, I had all these, like, preemptive resentments. And so anyways, like, I just like any addict, I go, like, full force into something. So I, like, quit school again. I quit my job because I realized that, like, it's just a bad, I was selling cars. It was just, like, this bad lifestyle for me to, like, get a bunch of money at one time and then be working with all these people who partied, and I luckily had that resolve to leave and put all my energy into recovery, and I moved in with my sober parents because I knew myself, and I knew, like, I would have to explain to them, like, where I was going every night if I decided to, and that they could see right through me, you know, and so I was going to, like, Nooners every afternoon, and then I was going to a night meeting, and I was just kind of finding my way around, and, like, these first three meetings were amazing. I went to the Well Group in Waukesha, my first meeting. I went to PPG, also in Waukesha, my second meeting, and then I went to the Barn, the Serenity Estates, my third meeting, and, like, I found, well, besides just being overwhelmed out of my mind because that meeting was huge, like, I found, like, a family. Like, these people looked at me when they asked me, like, who I was and how I was, like, I could tell that they actually cared to listen, not just, like, someone walking by and passing. And then the next time I came, they remembered my name. I don't know. It just, like, blew my mind. And so I got a sponsor right away. I was really excited. I was finding, like, my place. I was finally identifying with other people, and I was able to be honest and open and raw and more a mess than you can imagine seeing me today, because I was a disaster. But what I didn't do is I didn't have the, like, motivation to go through all of this. I was just so excited to hear about you, about me, about what that meant. I started, like, thriving on the fellowship, and I was finding little ways to be of service, which was great. You know, I knew that I couldn't help another addict, you know, with these steps, but I realized that I had one thing, at least for a little while, and that was a car and a driver's license. You know, I was fighting a DUI, so it wasn't going to last forever, but I wasn't even thinking about that. I just wanted to be helpful, truly. You know, so I started giving these people rides, and before I knew it, like, my license was then gone, and I have this terrible problem with asking for help. I like to pretend I can do it all, you know, and then burn it all to the ground before I'm like, help, save me, like, pull me out of this hole I dug myself. And but it was crazy. Like, this person reached out to me and was like, hey, like, can you give me a ride to Pocket of Enthusiasm tonight? And I'm like, I'm sorry, like, I actually just lost my license, and I don't know how I'm going to get there. And he's like, perfect, I know all the people. I've got a license for 2 years. I got someone on the way to you. And I'm like, oh, my God, like, these things that I was doing for someone without any expectation in return, like, now they want to be there for me. And, like, that was insane to me, you know. And I held on to that, like, fire, that just, like, desire and motivation for a while. I got 8 months, and then everything shut down. And I had only worked 3 steps. You know, I believed in this universe power. You know, I had a really hard time with God, but I struggled to really identify what I believed. I had, like, witnessed these miracles happening around me, whether it was someone who reached out who knew exactly, like, the right time to reach out, or, like, me going to a meeting and them talking about exactly what I was struggling with, or, like, having this random idea to, like, this is nuts, to try to, like, track down a friend of mine. And I didn't know what, like, led me to want to do this, but I'm like, I don't know, I need to. And this is just so hard. It's so hard to explain those God moments, you know? And so, like, nothing went as planned this day, like, the person that was supposed to come with me to a meeting wanted to go to another one. I was super pissed about it, because if you know, like, before you get sane, like, all you're a control freak, you know? So everything had to go my way. Otherwise, it was the worst day ever. And so, like, I just kept doing it, no matter how pissed I was. So I went to this meeting. I tried to catch my friend. I found out they were in the hood, but I couldn't do anything about it, right? Like, if I was going to call them out, they'd have some crazy excuse for it anyways, or they'd shut off their phone or wouldn't answer my call, so, like, what was I going to do? And a few minutes later, we're smoking a cigarette about to go into this meeting, and I don't know if anyone has an iPhone where they can, like, draw messages. I don't ever use it, but it's a thing. And this person, like, drew a line and, like, sent it to us, and we're like, what the hell's going on? And the next message is, help me. And, like, there would have been nothing. We tried to call, there was no answer, and there was, like, nothing we could do. And I remembered, I'm like, I had that weird feeling to, like, track them earlier. I had their location, like, we can find them. And what do you know, like, we called the police, we went down there, we left that meeting, and we saved their life, you know. And so, like, those moments that, like, I struggled to explain to you, but I started believing in, like, these miracles that were happening around me, but I couldn't box it. I couldn't describe it. I didn't believe that it was, like, an all-knowing power in the sky that was, like, sending me these signs. But I knew there was something outside of myself. And that was my biggest motivator, I guess, to kind of let go of that control. But like I said, I didn't work any further. You know, I wrote down a bunch of these names for the fourth step, and then I was like, I'm not angry anymore. It's fine. And surprise, it doesn't work. So all these meetings shut down. My sponsor goes MIA in a relationship and stops answering, and I decide, like, that's it. Like, I can only call her and nobody else. You know, I didn't think of the fact that, like, maybe I should ask someone else to sponsor me because this is no longer working. I just am like, okay, I'll just do it on my own, you know, until that one day, you know, where I don't have enough of a solution anymore. Like, that solution, that fellowship and those first three steps, like, that worked for me for 8 months, thankfully. You know, but that was no longer working for me. I became miserable, and I had not told anybody. So, like, how am I going to tell you now that it's gotten so bad? And then I got this text, and it was like, come over for a cookout. And it was an old partying friend. And I'm like, a cookout? Like, it'll be fine, right? Like, but I knew. Like, I knew what I was walking into, and I knew that I was setting myself up for failure. I just wanted it to, like, not be my idea, like, my plan. Like, I didn't go there to get fucked up, you know? It was somebody else's fault, you know, that I went there, and then they offered me things. And my job was on hold. I work in the service industry, and so we were closed down for COVID, so I had no real consequences. For a few months, I was somehow able to, like, fool my parents. I probably just made them doubt themselves every time they questioned me, you know, or, like, just didn't answer, and somehow they didn't kick me out. I don't know. But I was getting really, really miserable, you know. And so luckily, like, I had found, like, just a small amount of desire to come, like, try it again. You know, I wasn't sure if I was ready to let go of this anger that I was holding on to. I think one of the biggest reservations with me, like, not doing the four step was thinking that, like, some of these things that happened to me, you know, in high school that I mentioned, like, I thought I was going to have to find my part in that. You know, when, like, there wasn't one, you know, like, this is a terrible thing. It shouldn't have happened to me or anyone else, you know, and I thought I was going to have to, like, just say it was okay, and, like, that's not what this does. That was a terrible thing, you know, but now I can see that, like, as messed up as it is, like, that person truly didn't think they were harming me, you know, like, any terrible thing that I've done, I'm sorry, I look really bad. Anytime I had ever harmed another person, like, I wasn't going there to be like, yes, I'm harming you. It was my action that I thought was, I had perfectly good reason for, you know, either you harmed me, I didn't think about the harm that it was causing you, or, like, I just didn't care about anything else in my life, like, you were just, I can't think of the word, collateral damage, thank you. You know, and so, like, I started trying to think like that, including in this situation, you know, and it helped me lose a lot of resentment. I still don't like the fact that it happened, and but I can now pray that, like, other people that have harmed me see the harm they have caused and change, you know, and that was a miracle once I was willing to do that. So anyways, I was coming out of this relapse, kind of. I found a few meetings that were kind of happening off the books. They weren't officially run by their original people, but they were outside, and I was able to get to them. And I found a new sponsor, and she wanted to go through these steps quickly. Like, if it would have been done her way, I'm sure it would have been done in, like, 30 days. I was done in 60. She worked me through a 4-step, which, like, brought out these questions from the book. Like, it was, and, like, however you do it, as long as it works for you, like, I couldn't look at all these columns, and then it just, like, it overwhelmed me. It was too much, you know? So this was broken down one by one. I'm doing one resentment at a time, and it's really taking it apart for me, because otherwise I wasn't able to see it, you know? If I could see it, I wouldn't have needed to do it, you know? And so it really broke things apart. And then sharing it with her and hearing, like, how she's either had this experience or something much worse, like, I just felt so much relief. I've held on to so much for so many years. I wasn't allowed to talk about it. You know, I wasn't allowed to even talk to other family members about, like, my parents' stuff. That we don't discuss your parents' lives. You know, like, just smile, everything's fine. You know, and so, like, I was finally able to say these things out loud, and I didn't know how much I needed that. You know, and I was able to find that I may not have played a part in every situation, but I played a part in reacting to that situation, either in that time or afterwards, while I was holding on to those resentments. You know, and I treated people that had nothing to do with that, like, because of them, in terrible ways. You know, and once I started seeing that and started making those slow, like, amends to those people, like, I was able to let go of that fear. You know, I no longer, like, am fearful to, like, go to places, you know, that I avoided for so long because I had debts, or, like, because I had done somebody wrong, or didn't even remember doing someone wrong, you know? So I'm 60 days in. I'm through the steps, and I see a girl. I stopped going to, like, these meeting meetings once I had gotten a job and gotten through the steps. But for some reason, I went to this meeting one day, and this girl I went to high school with showed up, and I could just see the disaster that she was. I didn't need her to say she was just coming back, like, I knew. And she saw me and decided she wanted something I had. I didn't get it, but she did. And she asked me to be her sponsor. And, oh, my God, like, that is what I was missing at that point, like, 1,000%. You know, being a part of somebody else's, like, understanding, you know, breaking things apart the way it was done for me has been incredible. You know, watching the light come on in someone else's eyes, like, I just never thought I'd be able to witness that, you know. I didn't see it in myself, you know, the way other people did. And so it was really cool to watch it happen for the first time in another human being. And unfortunately, it's only been a few that I've been able to walk through the steps with. A lot of them have gone back out, and I realized that it had nothing to do with me. You know, I think that was huge for me to realize, is, like, that was somehow the plan. Like, they may have needed that little seed to be planted, and maybe now they have my phone number for when they come back, you know, and that'll help. I realized that I asked for a long time, I asked a lot of, like, why questions, like, why did this happen, why, you know, and I think another miracle that I found in this is that I don't have to know. You know, I think that I can just accept things. You know, and it's not every day. Like, there's a lot of days where I'm mad. you know, I'm mad at life. 3 months into my recovery this time, I lost that boyfriend that I told you guys about earlier to this disease. And I was blown away because my first thought wasn't to go break her use. It was to call his mom to see what she needed, to show up, to help plan a funeral, and to be there for the family. And that's when I realized that, like, the obsession had been lifted from me. You know, I didn't know when it happened. Like, I don't know. I don't know if it was after the fifth step. I don't know if it was after a ninth step. I don't know if it was after I started sponsoring. All I know is that, like, when push came to shove in my life and, like, this terrible thing happened, I wasn't looking for an excuse to run. You know, I was able to feel these really, really terribly hard feelings. And I was able to show up to meetings and be honest about them. And then I was able to just let others crowd around me and help me. You know, when a year ago, I wouldn't have allowed it. You know, I would have had to do it all myself because I knew the way that he would want it done. Or I just needed to have that control and be busy. Like, I let other people show up for me. And I always have doubted that other people will show up, even when they say they will. You know, like, I'm just so used to others and myself letting other people down. Like, something comes up and you can't do what you said you were going to do. And what do you know, like, these wonderful people in the program that own the Serenity Estates, like, they opened up their home and their property to my friends and family and people they didn't know to house a celebration of life. Like, this girl I met one time probably spent $100 putting together, like, a dessert, like, I wouldn't even call it a tray. It was a dessert table. It was massive, you know, and all these people came together and knew that, like, even though I couldn't tell you exactly what I needed, like, what to do, you know, if they decorated when that was the one thing. I could make all these phone calls and set up all these arrangements, but, like, I couldn't put balloons on the walls, you know, like, and they knew. And I guess I'm not telling you guys this to, like, feel bad or anything. I'm just telling you this because, like, if I hadn't gone through these steps so quickly, like, there's absolutely no way that I would have had the desire or motivation or energy or brain capacity to do it after this. You know, like, I can't wait until something's going wrong, like, the first time. You know, when I was already miserable and not being honest, I wasn't going to do anything about it then. Like, but I stayed honest. I stayed, you know, the whole time. And that was the difference, you know. And I just have to keep being aware of, like, these things popping up. Like I was talking about before, like, those first three steps couldn't carry me all the way through, and then I needed to do something different after that. Like, I still have to do that. I've been through the steps, and guess what? I just asked a girl last week to sponsor me, a new girl. I want to go through again because I inevitably have missed plenty of things. I inevitably have, like, plenty of defects that I'm completely unaware of, you know, and that she can point out for me because she doesn't know me, you know, and she has no bias or opinion, you know, like, she just has knowledge that I don't have. I have to stay willing to say yes to, like, these speaking engagements, even though I've been in my head all day, you know, like, and I have to show up, you know, when I say I'm going to show up and, like, do things that I never thought I would. I was a part of Wikipaw, you know, this past year. And, like, that never would have been my idea. Like, I don't even remember why I showed up to that committee meeting. Like, I think I was going to help on a subcommittee, like, very briefly. And then they're like, you're nominated for the events chair? And I'm like, okay, so, like, just the dance, like, at the conference, right? And I'm like, no. Like, all of the events. And as overwhelming as it was, like, people showed up yet again. Like, I was convincing, my brain loves to lie to me, I don't know about you guys, but, like, my brain told me that even after I witnessed all these people show up to me, for me, like, months before, that, like, nobody was going to show up and help me, and I was going to end up doing it all on my own, and it was going to be a disaster. But, like, every event, people always showed up to help. Like, even if it was just a few people, like, it always got done. Like, everything got set up. I had way less to do than I thought I would have to do, and, like, we threw an amazing conference, you know, and, like, above and beyond what I would have ever expected. And I think that just sums up my recovery in general. Like, I had no idea what I wanted to get out of this. All I wanted to do was, like, kind of be able to dance, like, a little bit, or, like, be a little bit less miserable. But, like, I'm able to be a good daughter to my mom. When I first moved in with my parents when I got sober, I was planning to stay there for, like, a couple months. I was sleeping on a couch because I'm like, I am not staying here, you know? And, like, unfortunately, life just didn't show up that way. Like, my boyfriend passed, and 3 months after that, my father died unexpectedly. And, like, thank God I stayed there. You know, I was able to show up for my mom. And I was able to, like, let someone be there for me, because had I got a place, like, I would have isolated. I know myself. Like, whenever I'm like, I want to stay home and just cuddle my dogs, I'm like, oh my God, I need a meeting. Like, I need to go. My brain's trying to do that thing again where it disconnects me from you, because I'm so used to that. I'm so used to not being a part of that. My brain will tell me over and over that I am not, you know, and I'm not good enough, and I don't have a good enough story to get up here and share. Like, it tells me this all the time. You know, the difference is today, like, I know it's a lie. I know my brain is, for whatever reason, messed up, and it wants me dead. So, like, whatever those crazy ideas are, I'm like, I can't fix them yet, but I know they're lies. So, like, just show up. You know, and those are the days that, like, are inevitably some of my best days. You know, it was the day I met my new sponsor this past week when I absolutely did not want to go to that meeting. It was the day that I picked up one of my sponsees. You know, it's always one of those days when I tell myself I really don't want to go. And so I have no idea what time it is. Okay, good. I don't have much more for you. I'm sorry this wasn't as organized as I normally am. I appreciate you all. Thank you, Mike, for asking me to speak, and I wish you guys another 24.